For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good evening, everybody. I think you all know me. My name is Nyozan. So we are entering the season of Thanksgiving. Therefore, I want to talk about the physical posture Zazen and Buddha Mudra. Well, not so much Buddha Mudra as a whole, but specifically the mudra with our hands as a way to find our way into some kind of discussion of the practice of giving thanks from a Buddhist perspective. And I'm just going to kind of read my notes. I got a little carried away today, and we want this to be a little brisk, and it's kind of jerky. And I'll never get through it unless I just kind of keep a close eye on this. I'll get tangled in my words. So I beg your forbearance with that. Okay. Thanksgiving. This holiday is really an extremely American holiday, and it's largely expressed in the Christian terms of the predominating culture. Yet its spirit does not strike me as a disciple of the Buddha as foreign or alien, even though, of course, much of the contemporary expression often I find very alienating and disturbing, and many things about the history of the holiday itself are disturbing. But I don't want to dwell on these things tonight. I rather just want to sort of examine this question of thankfulness and how and to whom and for what a little bit. What does thankfulness mean to me? In fact, the idea of gratitude, thankfulness, intuitively strikes me as an eminently dharmic one. For this reason, if you, for example, search online, you will find all kinds of contemporary talks about Zen and gratitude, or Buddhism and gratitude. However, I can't think of that many root texts that actually emphasize this explicitly, or put it in quite those terms. Maybe you can, but it's there, clearly, and that's why we can have these talks. And I think that we can look at the modes of our practice themselves as an expression of and cultivation of gratitude that is at once really subtle, I think, and extremely simple. And in this talk, I would like to try to unfold this a little bit. You know, so we come into this room, we go to our zafu or to our chair, or we go to our zafu and chair in the morning, and we simply sit down. And sometimes we say we just sit. That's all we're doing. But of course, there's a lot more that can be easily said about this. When we sit, we arrange ourselves in a way that is stable, hopefully sustainable, balanced, upright, relaxed, open, non-reactive, and leans neither forward or back or side to side. This physical posture, we assume, directly expresses qualities of mind that we hope to nurture in the cultivation of Zazen. In fact, Suzuki Roshi insists these forms, this actual thing that we embody in space among our friends, this is not, he says, the means to obtaining the right state of mind. That's really interesting. He says that to take this posture itself is to have the right state of mind. It expresses awakening. So, you know, between you know, what's going on here and what's going on here, there's no sort of cause and effect, he's saying. There's no sort of before and after. There's just expression of being awake in the world. Or maybe more. Clearly we could say being awake here and now in this place, wherever that might be, whatever world you might be inhabiting. So, you know, we've arranged our legs. And then we put our hands in what Suzuki Roshi calls the cosmic mudra. I think Taigen's got going on here. And this is also sometimes called the universal mudra. And Suzuki Roshi says, you should place your hands in the cosmic mudra. You should keep this mudra with great care, as if you were holding something very precious in your hands. Now, there are many, many mudras, as you know. So, hello. We are here. So why this one in particular? I think it is because it directly embodies a deep truth about practice. I've heard it said that in this mood, you know, so people ask, why do we do this? What's being expressed here? Sometimes people have said, well, you know, we hold the universe, all beings directly to our own center, and we hold our own center directly against or with all beings. Or they say things like, you know, it is as if we were gently holding the entire universe in our hands. Okay. But in that picture, gently holding the entire universe in our hands, you know, where exactly do we locate ourselves in that arrangement? I think this says something really important. It's a kind of a koan, actually. After all, we are ourselves by no means outside the universe, right? I mean, this alienated sense that somehow it's us here and everything else there is, in a really deep way, what practice is about, right? So, we're not outside the universe, and in gently holding it, we, of course, are holding ourselves as well. Or looked at in the other direction, and which comes to the same thing, the universe is gently holding us. So, to take this mudra seriously and think, well, what does this show us? It's an embodiment of, actually, I think, of the impossibility of sustaining a notion of the self as something separate. As Suzuki Roshi puts it, you means to be aware of the universe in the form of you, and I means to be aware of the universe in the form of I. You and I are just a swinging door. And this really precisely captures the same point he made before about the non-dual relation between the sort of so-called physical manifestation of Buddha Dharma, or Buddha Mudra rather, and the so-called mind there. The door swings one way, and it looks like something, and it looks like sort of an infinitely inwardly collapsing scenario of us holding the universe, holding us, holding the universe, and so on. Or the door swings the other way, the gaze shifts, and we see an infinitely expanding picture of the universe holding us, holding the universe, holding us, and so on. It's exactly the same thing. And this might be one sense in which it's called, you know, why it's called cosmic. It's this complete relation of, or interpenetration of whole to parts and so on. These two takes on things are neither the same nor different from one another. That's part of what I'm saying. Cosmic can either mean, it can mean infinitely or inconceivably vast, or that which pertains to everything is distinct from any particular thing. But the universal and the particular, as shown here, whether we believe it or not, is that the universal and the particular completely contain each other. They in no way ever cancel each other. Hence, we hear, for example, of the harmony of difference and sameness, or for those of you who know it, the four Dharma Dhatus of Huayan Buddhism. We won't go into that, right? But Suzuki Roshi, of course, as usual, expresses it very, very sweetly when he says that the inner world is limitless and the outer world is limitless, and they are really just one whole world, right? So what does this have to do with gratitude? Thanksgiving. The word itself combines two distinct but non-separate ideas. That is, the two, thanks and giving, can be seen as implying each other, or at least they should. And if this is so, then even though the texts of Buddhism don't really all that often highlight thankfulness explicitly, it nevertheless sort of permeates as a shadow, kind of, as the mirror image of what the Dharma does highlight, which is dana, or generosity. But there's a bit of a twist, and what I mean by a twist is this. The partners in the word thanksgiving, thanks, and giving are inflected differently in Buddha Dharma than what is common in our culture, right? Receiving is another conceptual partner of giving, and in typical North American cultural life, the emphasis is that we are thankful because we have received. So there are actually three linked things going on here. There's giving, there's receiving, and there's thankfulness. When we look at our meal practice and our chants, we can look at our meal practice and our chants as a way to see the kind of shift that is encouraged in Dharma practice. All three elements are expressed, but the weight kind of moves from the dyad of we receive and thus we are thankful to being we are thankful, we appreciate, therefore we practice dana. And it does so by framing these actions in exactly the same kind of seal or mudra expressed both in our sitting posture and in the way we place our hands, which is a physical putting forth of what we might understand as emptiness, as non-separation, of the harmony of difference and sameness. All these kind of things. Our meal practice begins with a very bare-boned recitation of Shakyamuni's biography, but this section ends with the words I'd like to bring forth here. May we, with all living beings, realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. So we have three things here, giver, receiver, and gift, and we're told that they're empty. But I tried to indicate that it's illogical as it might first seem. Part of what this means is that neither are they exactly identical, nor are they radically different. The emptiness does not cancel or obstruct giver, receiver, and gift, nor the other way around. To say that they are empty is just to say that they co-arise, right? I think. And there's no priority there. That's the side of sameness, but it doesn't turn away or close off the side of particularity, the side of Dharma position, and the different actions and responses that are appropriate always to particular Dharma positions, where we are situated, where we find ourselves as the concrete of expression of all that we are not, right? Particular responsibilities are called forth. Particular actions are requested of us. And this is shown in the way we enact serving in our meals. We are the same, right? This time I serve you and you receive. At the next sesshin, very well may be reversed, but the Dharma positions of server and receiver are never confused, and we enact and express different things through this ritual. But having proclaimed that emptiness is sort of the focus, having proclaimed emptiness the focus of the chant, then switches, right? It shifts to the other side, this side of particularity, this Dharma position thing, this me, this you, the particulars. It says, we reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. Another version of the chant makes this really clear, especially for people living in contemporary North America. It says that how does this food come to us? It is brought, it comes through the labor of other people and the suffering of other forms of life. What do we do with that? We reflect on our virtue and practice and whether we are worthy of this offering, what we are receiving. This line can be perplexing, or perplexes me, because immediately I ask myself, well, who and under what conditions would someone be unworthy of food and nourishment? But again, it might be useful to kind of shift our perspective slightly and realize, okay, I'm sustained through the suffering and labors of other beings, and ask myself, what is the appropriate response to being living in this situation? And ask myself, am I living in a way that also supports and honors all beings? Am I holding up the universe as it holds me? These should be, I think, kind of uncomfortable questions that we should be asking in practice. And I think they call for sort of honest and rigorous moment-to-moment examination of how we actually concretely move through the world. It also calls for a deep sense of respect, and it calls for a deep appreciation in both senses of the word, both seeing it for what it is and actually holding it dear, of our personal limitations. We regard it as essential to keep the mind free from excesses such as greed. What is greed? The dictionary defines it as excessive desire to acquire or possess more than one needs or deserves. So again, let's set aside deserves. What do we need for human flourishing? Do we live in a way that we take, as the name of our meal practice means, the appropriate amount or appropriate amounts? Or do we live at the expense and flourishing of other people and other beings? Honestly, I think that answer for us now in this room, despite our deep yearning, is that it's the latter. The question becomes, is it even possible to live appropriately in this mucked up karmic situation we find ourselves in? What do we need to do to make such a thing possible? Greed, of course, is rooted in not understanding the non-separation that I was talking about before, and in a sort of topsy-turvy notion of selfhood that puts us ultimately in a zero-sum game with all other beings and everything else that is destructive both of self and other. That is, it's destructive of everything. So clearly, the answer to those questions have to address greed at both personal and societal levels. Why do we do this? Why do we engage in this meal practice? The chant says at different places, for the sake of awakening and so that all beings may be nourished and supported. This is not, as a whole, as a culture, what we are doing. Now, we talk about dana frequently, and not unreasonably, this is often in terms of offering material support, So, you know, for example, we come to do a session and we give the greeter some money or we leave something in the Dana bowl. And that's very important. It's one way to talk about it. But we should always keep in mind that the texts always say that the highest form of Dana is to offer Dharma. The English gloss of generosity for Dana, with its resonance of generation, growth, grace, reinforces this notion. And offering Dharma is not primarily a matter of someone sitting in the front of the room giving talks like I'm doing now. That's part of it. But rather, it is how each of us moves dharmically through the world. How we manifest and embody, show up in the world. How we take that Buddha mudra and not a seal, a stamp, and not only use that to work on this side of that door, but also on the other side of that door. So, as I said about the cosmic mudra, it isn't simply a limitless inward exploration and clarification. It is also always outward expression and support and nurturing of all beings. That's part of what Dharma means. And if it's not that, something may have gone wrong in our practice. There's this beautiful dialectic that happens in practice between what we do as particular beings in particular Dharma positions and as we, from that Dharma position, you know, take responsibility for responding to the world. Suzuki Roshi expresses this when he says that Zen is Hinayana practice with Mahayana spirit. So all of this is to say, sort of perhaps in mimicry of the tropes that we get in the Prajnaparamita literature, that Dana isn't simply material support, but is also not material support. And therefore, it is precisely material in nature. Do you get it? I mean, I think this is right. We've been called to come to terms with how we move through the world. And there is an extreme urgency to this now, as we see ever more clearly how destructive it has been, the way we've been doing things have been so far, as we've acted so unskillfully as people and as cultures and as a species. In short, I think it may be time to think about, when we think about being thankful, not to be thankful for what we've received exactly. This is too easily when we see how the holiday is expressed now. And so I was sitting here writing this talk, I was getting the steady stream of emails about, you know, what apparently Thanksgiving is really about, which is, you know, the games that are going to be on and, you know, all the great Black Friday deals that are coming up and a way we can get and take and consume. And, you know, so being thankful for what we receive and having that be the emphasis really apparently easily tips into lulling us into a kind of over-concern with what we can get. And this in turn ineluctably devolves into really, in my view, theft and exploitation and massive destruction. We see it. It continues to do so. So it may, at this time of Thanksgiving, be time rather than taking this approach to offer Dharma in the most expansive non-dual sense that we can muster. That is, not to be thankful simply for what we have received, although of course we do that also, but ourselves to offer the Dana of thankfulness, to move from I have received and I am therefore thanks, usually to some mysterious elsewhere rather than to the people and beings that have actually brought these things forth. Excuse me for saying. Move from that to instead realizing our thankfulness, our appreciation, and from there moving to generosity in the broadest sense, in a dharmic sense, in a way that takes care of other beings, the world in general. That is, we, you know, we have to begin to act with kindness towards the entire world, as the Metta Sutra says, with a sense of what we can give and what we can give up, in simple appreciation for this one bright pearl that we have always, as I said at the beginning, held in our hands. So I began this kind of weird, loopy talk with observations about the stable, balanced, upright, relaxed, open, alert, body-mind expression of Zazen. How do we make these qualities also descriptive of how we actually inhabit the earth? I spoke of the way we hold our hands and what this expresses. Going back, Suzuki Roshi said we should practice these and this mudra as if we were holding something precious in our hands. But every day now, it becomes more urgently clear that it is no longer a question of as if, right? But rather, we hold in our hands, it's up to us, what happens with this very precious thing? In the most literal and obvious and straightforward way. That is the Dharma position of all of us sitting in this room now, I think. And it doesn't contradict or obstruct the way we thought about practice before. But they have to include each other, or we are essentially, I think, turning away from Dharma. So, I'd invite us to practice the way with gratitude. After all, our hair is now on fire. All right? So, thank you for listening to me. And if you have any questions, you can ask Taigen. Whoever you would like to ask, please.
Well, you know, it brought to mind that I've never heard anyone except Suzuki Roshi call the mudra possible.
What do they usually call it?
Well, that's meditation mudra.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
But I was thinking maybe his Dharma position of teaching on the outskirts of Haight-Ashbury in the 60s and 70s may have influenced his terminology. Although I
perhaps
think very much. I don't know.
Maybe.
I would like to say thank you to Sudesh for his just wonderful presence in our Sangha over whatever period of time it's been. And I'd just like to say personally how much I've appreciated all that you've brought, and share a little memory with the rest of the people in the room. So, I don't know, a year ago or so, Sudesh asked me if I would be willing to talk to him about how my work relates to my Zazen practice. I work in natural areas, and I said, sure. And that's a hard thing to talk about. And You are the most impressive, active listener I've spoken to in a very long time. It was so wonderful to talk to you about something that was close to my heart, in a way that I could share intimately. You were very, very good, and it was an important conversation for me. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Jen, could we wait just a second? I would like to go back to Hogetsu. Was there more you would like to say about that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I interrupt?
No, not at all. Not at all. But I just feel like I didn't really respond. And I was just wondering if there was more you would like to say about that, or if there's something about that observation that somehow troubles what I was trying to present, or... I mean, do you think it's a red herring to use that, to play with the words in that way?
It's a cute herring.
Yeah, okay. All right, good. Okay.
The word cosmic is wonderful.
Kind of cosmic, kind of Haight-Ashbury-y.
Yeah.
I see it referred to that way in old books about Japanese Buddhism. So I don't think Sibylla should have
that. And then cosmic? I just have never seen it referred to that way, except it just occurred to me, but I haven't read very much, so.
I have no idea what the Japanese, Join, I don't know what that means, though.
Well, I don't know which character it is, but I have seen that as a translation.
I'm sorry, Jen, do you want to?
I thank you for your talk very much.
You're welcome.
And, I really enjoyed having you sit here, and I'm sorry that you're going to be leaving because we're going to miss you. But I understand that you've gone for 6 months and then you'll come back to the States.
To the States, but I'm not sure where in the States.
No, I'm not sure where in the States. Well, hopefully we'll see you again. Eric, I feel like your talk could be given every day of the year. It is not necessarily a talk for Thanksgiving. And I've gotten involved, or I believe, in the idea that we should change Thanksgiving Day to Indigenous Peoples Day and not call it a commercial American capitalistic celebration, but honor the people who lived on this continent before the Europeans came. I really dislike also the sentimentalization of Indigenous people's culture, because it was not it was not necessarily virtuous and wonderful and good for everybody in their culture. But I do think that we need to pay attention to what has happened to them. And in fact, when you said there's no future and no past, no future and no past, we need to pay attention to what's happening to them today and now. I've come back from a 6-day trip to New Mexico, and so I was very, very involved in understanding what has been happening to the Native peoples, particularly of New Mexico, because along with Nevada, the Native peoples are being freed run over unmercifully by our culture. So I just wanted to bring up the idea that Eric's talk was really, really good, and I really liked it, and I thought it was also very amusing in spots. But it is a universal talk, not just for this one day. And then something else occurred to me when Sid was coming around. When we That's the Navajo name for their nation. Navajo is a name that we give them, but they call themselves Diné. And we had a ceremony where there were like 40 of us in a circle. And they brought their sage, smudges, and they went around to every single person for a long time. It was really kind of tedious as far as I was concerned, but it was very similar to this coming around and greeting every person and being honored by every person and honoring every person. And they took the smudge and went from our feet to our heads and behind every single person that was in the circle, and there were a lot of us. So I just wanted to bring that.
Thank you.
And I want to appreciate everything that Jan just said. So for those of you who don't have smudges, a kind of incense, often with sage or some other maybe cleanse. But it's worth mentioning. Some of you were here yesterday about Thanksgiving. People say, but also just connecting thankfulness, gratitude, and generosity and giving seems helpful and Buddhist to me. But also, what I talked about yesterday is that the Bodhisattva practice of thanksgiving includes to be grateful, to be living in very, very difficult times, because that's when our practice is most needed. So just to mention that. Anyway, I really appreciate your talk very much, Nyesan. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For giving that. Any other last comments or responses?
Thank you for your talk. I look forward already to listening to the recording.
They're better than speaking.
You mentioned that gratitude operates in a couple of dimensions that we're grateful for, very tangible things, you know, that we've received, and I think that there's a, you mentioned that there's a kind of gratitude that doesn't, that it's harder to put our finger on, perhaps. And that's why I want to listen to your talk again, because I'd like to understand that more. And I would just like to say that, you know, I'm grateful for your talk and gratitude, because literally there are a couple of you whom I haven't really spoken to, but apart from you, whom I'm glad to see and meet, I could literally list the reasons why I'm grateful to know each of you. It's so very tangible. You know, you talk about the mudra and this physical position. I feel like this room is a mudra that has helped me for several years now. And I could go on, but it'd be better if I don't. So.
No, but it's an interesting observation, because it is very much the same thing. There's you know, I me and you're you, but...
Are you sure?
Perhaps. We'll go into this later. But whether or not I am, whatever is here is brought forward, right, as, you know, it co-arises very much with being in Sangha, right? So there's that dual... I don't even know how to talk about non-dual, really. I mean, there's sort of polarity. There's sameness and different, both expressed completely.
So we'll have a chance to all talk together more over tea after this. But let's close formally with the four Bodhisattva vows.